I would like to thank the Kaladasi Shurin and Rabbi Tzuk Israel for asking me and inviting me to speak this evening. It's a big kavod, of course, to present before such an august kehila, and I greatly appreciate once again the invitation. So this week's parasha is Parashas Vayishlach, and there is a pasuk that says in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chafei, Vayivaser Yaakov Labade, that Yaakov Avinu, after ushering his family with all of his wives and his children across the Nachal, across the stream, the pasuk then says that he was left alone. Yaakov Avinu was left alone, and that's of course when he had the wrestling with that angel, as we know. So Rashi says on this pasuk, "Vayivaser Yaakov, shachach pachim ketanim." What was he doing alone? He had forgotten some small jars, the chazar aleihem, and he went back for them. And Rashi, in some versions of Rashi, says, "Mikan." From here, we see shat tzadikim chafin al memainam, that tzadikim, they treat their property with great care. Shel yishlachu yideim begezel, that they should not send forth their hands at theft, meaning that because tzaddikim are so particular and they're so ethical when it comes to earning their money, so it doesn't come easily and therefore it doesn't go easily. So if Yaakov Avinu was all of a sudden realized that he had forgotten some very minor jug, some kalim that normally person wouldn't even consider going back for, but a tzaddik would go back for it because he treats his property with great care. So Rav Gifter, the great Talmud Rosh Yeshiva, quotes in the name of Rav Mordechai Pogromansky. Rav Mordechai Pogromansky was one of the legends of pre-war Lithuania. He learned in Telz, and Rav Gifter considered him in many ways to be a Rebbe of his. He was a brilliant, brilliant person, Rav Pogromansky. They say about him that he learned Dutch language just by one time receiving a package of a package with a newspaper of Holland, from Holland, in the mail, and he was able to figure out the whole language just by reading through a newspaper, even though he didn't know the language at all before he received it. That's just to give a little bit of a glimpse as to this man's brilliance. So Ramatul, as they used to call him, he said that, how did Chazal know that this is in fact what happened? How did Chazal know from this pasuk that he stayed over that night because he realized that he had forgotten something? He had forgotten Pachim Ketanim. Where exactly is that Merum is in the pasuk? How do you know that? Where do you see that from the pasuk? So Ramatul said that when the pasuk says Vayivaser Yaakov Levade, that Yaakov was left alone, or he stayed there alone, what that means is that Yaakov did something that he was in a league of his own regarding. Meaning, very few people in the world would actually do what Yaakov Avinu did. If you stop and think about it, let's say we would be staying in a hotel, and then we leave the hotel and we're already driving on a highway and we're, I don't know, 2 hours away, and all of a sudden it dawns on us that we had forgotten in the hotel room a toothbrush, or we had forgotten something very, very small, something very trivial. How many people would actually go back for it? You say, no, it's a few dollars, I'll get another one in a drugstore, it's not a big deal. There's no need for me to turn around the car and go back and get it. How many people in the world would do that? Very, very few. It doesn't really, it doesn't even seem logical to do. When the pasuk says, "Vayivaser Yaakov Levade," that Yaakov remained to do something that he was levade about. Yaakov Avinu was such a tzaddik that he was all alone. There was no one like him. He did an act which was really unparalleled in the world, when he made this decision to go back to fetch his item. He didn't need to. Yaakovina was at this point very wealthy. We see all of the gifts that he just sent to Esau, very, very elaborate gifts, and that was and he still was able to continue after sending all those gifts. The Pasuk then goes on to say that Yaakov was shalom, he was shalom the Mamina, he still had pretty much all of his money, all of the very great gifts that he sent to Esau as a durin, as a present, really were a drop in the bucket to what he actually owned. So a man of this wealth, if you have a person worth millions and millions of dollars for him to go back for a toothbrush, doesn't seem like it makes too much sense. But Yaakov Avinu was levade in this. Yaakov Avinu was somebody that he so cherished every penny because it came to him with a great degree of honesty and integrity. So he wasn't so willing to just say, forget it, leave it, let's go on, it's not a big deal, it's just pasim kedanim. And that was the greatness of Yaakov Avinu. Now, what we can learn from this Rashi and from this Chazal about Yaakov Avinu going back for pasim kedanim is that if a tzaddik is machshiv so much pasim kedanim, if he so appreciates and places such value on even small things, then how much more so would he place value in large things or in really valuable things? If for something that's pretty much almost worthless, he made it his business to go back and, make a U-turn and just to fetch those items, alachas kama v'kama, things are very valuable, even if they're very small in size, but if their value is great, then a tzaddik and all of us should emulate Yaakov Avinu and try to appreciate things that are of value, even if they're very small in size. And this is what I am referring to. Another story that took place with Rav Gifter. Rav Gifter once was walking with a student of his, with a Talmud, and they were going to visit a person who was a businessman who was doing quite well in the diamond industry in the diamond district, and Rav Gifter took his Talmud to visit this man to try to get a contribution out of him for the Talz Yeshiva. While Rav Gifter was schmoozing with a businessman in his store, his Talmud was looking under a microscope that was in the store at these little baguettes. Baguettes are little, almost chips of diamonds that are used to enhance a main diamond. So on the sides of it, there are things called baguettes, very, very small, but valuable. And under a microscope, you're able to see all of the facets of these beautiful chips. These are diamond chips that have value. And this Balabas, this store owner, notices that Rav Gifter's student is looking under a microscope. So he sort of jokes to Rav Gifter, you better be careful because this student of yours seems to be very taken by the diamonds, and who knows, maybe he might want to leave yeshiva and pursue a career in business and maybe even in the diamond industry. Rav Gifter looks at this wealthy diamond dealer and he says, you have nothing to worry about. Rest assured, my Talmud is not interested in going into business. He loves learning. He's wonderful at learning, and all he wants to do is learn. You're going to ask me, so then why is he looking under a microscope at the baguettes? Rav Gifter said that he's trying to learn Musar from those diamonds, from those little baguettes. That you have to appreciate everything in Torah. If you see that these little baguettes, which are so small and so they could so easily blow away even, but yet they have value, and you have to appreciate the value and look at how valuable they are, that they serve such an important role on a ring, so how much more so when it comes to Torah, when it comes to every little chiddush in Torah, every little Rashi, every little line of Chumash, every Targum, every Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, every little more so a prayer that a person is zeichet to learn, that a person merits to learn, everything is valuable. If a little baguette can contain so much value, how much more so Torah, even in the most bite-sized segment of Torah, even if it's something that seems so insignificant about Torah, just a little Bart or a little Rashi, everything in Torah is so super valuable, and that's what my Talmud said Rav Gifter was taking in as a lesson from this. I once heard another story. I went to a Levaya of a great Rosh Yeshiva. His name was Rav Avram Yafin. Rav Avram Yafin was the Rosh Yeshiva of Beis Yosef Navardik. He was a brilliant, brilliant Talmud Chacham. And after he died, after his Patira, so he had a neighbor in Brooklyn who lived across the street from him and was not Jewish. The neighbor was a guy. It was a guyish woman, and she basically went to be Menachem Abel by the Yafin family after her neighbor died. And when she came in to the Shiva, she went over to Rav Yafin's son and successor, and she said, you know, your father was such a wonderful man. He was such a gentleman. He always said good morning, and he had such fine character, etc. She says, but I never really knew what he did for a living. I was always a little confused. I didn't know what your father did for a living. So he said, well, what did you think that my father did for a living? Said the younger Rabbi Yafin. So she said, I'm not sure, but I think that he must have been in the diamond business. So he said, well, why do you think that? So she said, because every night I would watch him through the living room window in his house. My house is directly across the street, as you know, and I was able to look through the window, and I would just love watching him. And he was like all consumed by something very, very small on the table, and you spent hours and hours just staring at whatever he was looking at. I don't know exactly what he was looking at, that I wasn't able to see, but I always assumed he had that light over his desk, and he was spending, and what else could he be looking at other than diamonds? And so I figured he must have been either a diamond cutter or a diamond polisher. Was I right? And Rabbi Yafin's son was about to correct her, but then he thought about it for a little bit, and he says, you know what, you're 1,000% right. That's exactly what my father did. My father was a diamond polisher. And what he meant to say was that Tamid Chachamim, Tzadikim, they are very busy constantly with polishing diamonds. Diamonds are very small. They're almost, some of them are so small that they're close to invisible, little diamond chips, little baguettes. And even diamonds themselves are so small, but yet they're so valuable. And it depends, you know, on the clarity of the diamond and the different types of cut that the diamond has. But there's great value in very, very small things. And our job in life is to appreciate every little thing that's so small and appreciate the value that is therein. Just like Yaakov Avinu was able to appreciate the Pachim Ketanim, those small jugs that really were so small and seemingly not so valuable, but yet to a tzaddik, everything has value. There's always something that's precious about every little thing. And when it comes to learning especially, every little thing that we learn in Taisvus, every little thing we learn in Rashi, in Chumash, a shir, if we're able to listen to a shir, if we're able to give a shir, we're able to participate in a shir, whatever that we could do in our life, every word of Torah, the Vilna Gaon says, is its own mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So if you're able to learn an hour and maybe say thousands of words, that's thousands of very, very, very valuable diamonds that we take with us for the rest of our life. And so this is a very, very critical yisrael that we learn from Yaakov Avinu, that Yaakov Avinu cherished everything in life. There was nothing insignificant. And when it comes to learning, like we said, the Stipler, who was a lot of B'nai Taira wrote letters to the stipler, and they were maybe depressed that they weren't successful in their learning. They compared themselves to their peers that were maybe smarter or more accomplished in learning than they were. The stipler used to write back letters, and many of them were pretty similar. And he would write that you have to understand that when it comes to learning, it's not always the sharpest person that becomes the Talmid Chacham. It's not always the one with the quickest mind or the most creativity, but it's just somebody that continues to learn and has a thirst for learning. And he said that every single line of Gemara that you learn is success, and you have to savor it. You have to appreciate it. Don't say, what's the big deal? Other people are finishing whole Masechta, so big deal. I did a daf of Gemara. Every daf is chashuv, every rashi is chashuv, every taisus, even those little small taisus, and everything that we could learn in our lives is so valuable. I saw an amazing story about Rav Shmuel Birnbaum. Rav Shmuel Birnbaum was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva in Brooklyn, and he was known to be just an amazing stemel, a symbol of love of Torah. There's a very, very beautiful video that is that can be found online of Rav Shmuel Birnbaum at a chasna, at a table, together with Rav Leib Bax. Rav Leib Bax was the Rosh Yeshiva of Detroit, and they were close friends going back from the Mir Yeshiva in Europe, in Shanghai. And on the video, they were at a chasna together, and they picked up on learning a sugya that they had left off learning, 30, 40 years ago in Shanghai, maybe 50 years ago. And they were still fighting about the sugya that they were learning all the way back there. And you see that they start out like friendly and nice to each other. And then before you know it, they're like literally fighting almost. Like they're getting like almost violent, fighting over what the tzais meant and what the nesivas meant and how to understand the sugya. And one of them gets up and makes a gesture like the other one doesn't know what he's talking about. And this was viewed by tens of thousands of people. It's a very, very beautiful video. And that's who Rav Shmuel Birnbaum was. Rav Shmuel Birnbaum was somebody who was kulei Torah. He loved learning. He was the greatest masmid of his time. And he wasn't really interested in anything else. He just wanted to learn. He wanted to give shir. And that's really primarily all that defined him. He would go to Eretz Yisrael, and he would go straight from the airport to Bnei Brak to Rav Shach, and before he even said any formal Shalom Aleichem, he was already opening a Gemara and asking Rav Shach, what the Pshat in a certain Gemara was, and they would fight it out, and that's all that he wanted to do with his life. All he was just one Torah personality. He was just purely Torah. So one time, his son-in-law came to him to invite him to his granddaughter's wedding, meaning Rav Shmuel Birnbaum's granddaughter was getting married. So his son-in-law came to invite Rav Shmuel to the chasna. So he said, "Where is the chasna going to be?" He says, "The chasna is going to be in Lakewood. We're planning on making it in Lakewood." Yeah, the invitations were not put out yet, but they already had given an agreement to a hall in Lakewood. And Rav Shmuel got very agitated because Rav Shmuel, as was known, never missed a second Seder, an afternoon Seder in Yeshiva. He was always there, unless there was some, terrible crisis, emergency. Rav Shmuel was always there. It's very rare for a lot of Rosh Yeshivas to be their second Seder in their Yeshiva. Rav Shmuel wanted to be their first Seder, second Seder, and I think many nights, night Seder. So Rav Shmuel made it his policy. He told Chalmidim that if you want me to be Masada Kedushin by your chasna, you have to understand that I'm going to be there late because I have to first finish second Seder in Yeshiva, and only after second Seder is over will I, be able to get in, to be driven to wherever your chasna is. So if your chasna is in Brooklyn, it'll be, 10 minutes plus whenever Second Seder is over. And if it's in, you know, Manhattan, it's going to be half an hour after Second Seder is over. But you have to understand that that's what I need to do. So when his own granddaughter was getting married in Lakewood, that was a very big question mark for him. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, why are you making it in Lakewood? You know that I want to learn Second Seder in Yeshiva. How am I supposed to get from Lakewood to, from Yeshiva in Brooklyn all the way to Lakewood in time? I can't do that. So the person said, the son-in-law said, well, you know, it's your granddaughter. Like, maybe the Yeshiva could make an exception. He says, I know, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's important for me to be at Second Seder. So Rav Shmuel says, let me ask you a question. Why did you decide to make it in Lakewood in the first place? Like, you live in Brooklyn. The other side lives in Brooklyn. Why not make it in Brooklyn? He says, well, you know, everybody knows it's much cheaper to make weddings in Lakewood. It's about, you know, it's substantially cheaper. So that was the consideration. That was the overriding consideration that we had. And so we made this decision to make the chasma there. So Shmuel says, what's the difference in value? How much money are you saving by making it in Lakewood? He says, well, it's about $5,000 difference. It's a lot of money. So Shmuel, without even thinking, he opened his desk drawer, and he took his checkbook out, and he wrote a check out. Rav Shmuel Berman was not a wealthy man. He was a reshiva. He had no money, but he wrote out a check for $5,000 to his son-in-law. He says, you take this money, and you tell the whole in Lakewood, you know, that you're not doing it, and you make the chasma in Brooklyn, and then I'll be able to come right after Second Seder. Now, Second Seder is something that I don't think many people would be overly concerned about. You know, if you have any sort of, you know, a chasma, a family chasma, of course, everyone understands that if I have to miss Second Seder, I miss Second Seder. But Shmuel Birnbaum didn't look at it that way. He looked at it like a diamond. He looked at every minute of learning Torah as invaluable, and it is. But not everybody has that same appreciation for things. This is the trick in life, is to be levade, to try to find ways to be singular in appreciating the smaller things in life, the pachim ketanim of life that most people trample on and most people do not have that feeling for. But a tzaddik has feelings for all things, even if they seem to be not too valuable. And certainly a tzaddik has even greater feelings for things that are small but have tremendous value. They for sure focus on that, levade, in a way that's theirs and theirs alone. Just to segue from that into something that's really practical in all of our lives, whether or not we're learning Torah that much or full-time or part-time, but there's something that, a lesson here that really applies across the board to everybody. That's beyond diamonds and beyond Torah, and that is life itself. And life is, as we all know, a great gift. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us every single day a new opportunity. We wake up in the morning, we say Maida'ani, and we're able to get a brand new start on the day. Whatever happened yesterday might have been a hard day, it might have been a bad day, it might have been a sad day, but we wake up refreshed. Yalta Afkid Ruchi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we entrust our spirit with HaKadosh Baruch Hu before we go to sleep at night. And then we wake up the next morning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already refreshed our neshama, we're able to start new, we're able to have a brand new opportunity. Every day is a brand new chance to daven better and to learn better and to have better midas and to be successful in ways that perhaps we weren't successful previously. And every moment of life is precious. Every single moment of life is very, very important. And the unfortunate reality is that we very often squander a large portion of our days and of our nights. You know, we have technology that takes our attention away from important things. And, you know, we listen or we watch the news, even the kosher news, even the yeshiva world news or the you know, other varieties of blogs and things that are, you know, it's important to be up on basically what's going on in the world, but sometimes we tend to look at those sites or read newspapers or listen to radios way too much, that much more than we could ever possibly need. And instead of doing those types of pastimes, far better to spend time appreciating life, smelling the roses, being able to appreciate one's family, one's spouse, one's children, one's grandchildren, one's parents, one's siblings, things that, you know, really are the stuff of life, things that make life precious. And if a person's able to really keep in mind how every moment of life is a gift, and what other people treat as pachim ketanim, other people treat as really negligible sort of things that aren't so important. And time is something that a lot of people waste and they kill. And that's that expression, killing time, is quite literal. Time is life, and if you squander time, you're basically killing life. So part of the lesson that we take from this parasha, from Yaakov Avinu, is Vayivasa Yaakov Levade. If we want to be able to be in a league of our own, to be able to be like a Yaakov Avinu that appreciates the pachim ketanim and goes back for them, even though they are not valuable, but he sees value in them. And by extension, we see value in every word of Torah, every minute that we're zaycha to daven to Hashem, every moment that we're able to do chesed with others. All of that is valuable, but every second of life is also something that has such inherent value. It's a commodity that we really only appreciate sometimes when it's too late. The Chafetz Chaim used to say that life is like a postcard. How is it like a postcard? He says, if you see on postcards, for those of you that remember what a postcard is, so you start off the first few lines like with a large leisurely, you know, type of handwriting, and you write in bigger letters, bigger font size, if you will, and then as you're continuing to write and you realize that you have so much more to write to your friend, but you don't have that much room left on the card, then you start writing smaller and smaller and smaller on the bottom of the card. You're literally squeezing in these, you know, micrography, like microscopic letters, until you totally run out of space. The Chafetz Chaim say that's exactly how people conduct their life. They have, when they're young, they think they have all the time in the world, and so they act very leisurely, and they squander so many opportunities to do the right thing, and then they waste time, they waste life, and then as they get older and older, they realize that life is not forever. And so then they try to chaperai, and they try to squeeze in more and more mitzvahs, more Torah, more being a mensch, doing chesed, which is wonderful. But if they would have planned ahead and we would have made sure to figure this out earlier in life, then our life would be that much more valuable. And so that's another very important takeaway lesson from this parasha, that we should appreciate everything, that this is a world that is doesn't last forever. Life, it's you know, it comes and it goes, and you see that that not everybody is zeicha to have arichas yamim, and even if you have arichas yamim, it's it's yimei shneisem b'em shivim shana, 70 years, and the gur shmanim shana. If you're lucky, you have a little more strength, it's 80 years, but it's not so much how many years you have; it's what you do with those years. And if we're able to take this lesson and really try to use every moment wisely and be a good person and always try to be considerate to other people and realize that life is not forever, so it's important to maximize all the potential, squeeze out as much of life as you can, appreciate the good times and appreciate your family, and every single day is another ability to accomplish great things, then that will make our life much richer and much more accomplished. And we'll be following in the amazing Midas of Yaakov Avinu, who teaches us this, who teaches us to be levada, to be unique in this regard. The whole world might have a completely different understanding of life, and they don't understand the value of life, and they waste life, but Klal Yisrael is different. Rav Schwab, Mariner of Schwab, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, used to say on the Pasuk, the Ata Abba Mesemai Sidrash, that you, Klal Yisrael, will tread on the highest places of the Gayim. So the simple taich is that we're walking on the bummis on top of the high places of the Gayim. Rav Schwab says, the Ata Abba Mesemai Sidrash, our journey, our deres, our march begins where the Gayim's highest place is, meaning you take the most ethical, most honest, the wisest guy. That's not what we're supposed to compare ourselves to. That's the beginning of our journey. That's the first step. The first step is you take the highest guy, and that's where a Jew's beginning of journey begins. And that's so true. We should never compare ourselves to Gayim and say, they're doing it, and they're online, and they're doing, watching this and doing that and going here and going there, so it must be acceptable for us as well. We're supposed to find the most levade guy, and that's where our levade begins. And we have to always understand the importance of being an Am HaNibchar, of being a nation that has a different goal than the rest of the world, and we have to act on a more exalted, a higher plane. And in Mitzvah Hashem, we should always be able to give Nachas Ruach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we should get Nachas Ruach from our families. Ken Yiratzin, I'd like to thank all of you for participating this evening and listening to me, and I want to wish you all a wonderful Shabbos, and in Mitzvah Hashem, a beautiful Hanukkah. Havolein v'tayvah.